Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And hello once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. Every week at Wednesday, we bring you American Tennis, and we talk about everything that has to do with the growth of American tennis, how our youngsters are doing in American tennis, how we're doing in the pros, and basically, it's anything you want to talk about. We ask you to stand up, speak out, say those things you want to say every week in American Tennis. This is the forum to do it. We always quote Edmund Burke and saying, all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. If you have something on your mind you want to say, well, let's say it. Let's get it on the table so we can talk about it. We've got lots of issues right now in American tennis, and a lot of good people trying to solve some problems, but we have a lot more work to do, obviously. This is American Tennis every Wednesday at noon on the UR Tennis Network, the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S network. You can call in area code 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. If you'd like to talk about anything, bring up a question, talk to our guest, and but we just say address issues, never people. And I always tell my friends, doggone it, you never make other people, your own light shine brighter by trying to put other people's out. And I know there's some people out there we don't agree with. I know there's some dim bulbs out there that I know there's some people we're not too fond of, or their actions we're not too fond of. And always, when you address them, just say, hey, it's a good person saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing maybe, but address issues, not people. My website's chuckcreasy.net, K-R-I-E-S-E.net, chuckcreasy.net. You can get my camps, my books, just pretty much everything I'm doing. I actually, you can get every American tennis program over the past 3 years. We now have hit the three-year mark, and thank you, Jason Haynes, executive director of the UR Tennis Network. He's getting information out there right now. And that's about it. Oh, other than folks, Steve Clark, Coach Steve Clark out on the West Coast has a new program, and he actually has Wayne Bryan on the show this week. If you could look to the UR Tennis Network and his program, Lisa Stone every week has outstanding guests and a lot to say with her Parenting Aces program, as does Jason Haynes' own College Connection program, which is 2 hours from right now. I'm Coach Chuck Creasy, and we want to talk American tennis today. And first of all, a lot of apologies about last week's show. Boy, did we goof up. I was on a computer that I was not familiar with. And you know, folks, that the show got dropped. I got it going and just botched it big time. And I need a technical assistant, I think. Although I am improving light years with my computer skills, I need a technical assistant of some type. It's pretty cool the way you can do so many things on the computer, but there's a lot of ways to goof a lot of things up. I wanted to talk about American tennis a little bit here and set the table. Last week, about a week and a half ago, we finished the French Open, and that was a fantastic match with Djokovic, and Wawrinka in the finals of the French Open, and I literally got pretty fired up watching that match. I'm just proud to be a tennis player. I was just extremely proud to be a tennis player. It really is special when you see a battle of two warriors and you see people that are doing everything they possibly can do to survive, to win. This game of tennis is absolutely the toughest game in the world. I don't do Facebook too much, but I did send a blurb out, and I said pretty much that I was just proud to be a tennis player today with those two guys, and I don't see anything at all that we are doing that, that is going to match up to these guys. It's just pretty daggone awful what's going on with our training. Sorry, I think we're building a recreational sport. I think we're building an after-school activity. I don't see our kids thriving for the competition. We're teaching them how to play a little bit, but we're, everybody says we want to expose everybody and get participation, but I keep telling everybody excellence breeds participation. You cannot make people fall in love with this game or lead them to fall in love with this game unless you make it hard. Next time you take a couple kids out to play, just try drilling them and or letting them play, and they're going to want to play. They're going to want to compete. So I want to talk here a little bit. I'm hoping that we have a better showing at Wimbledon here. French does not set up to the style of our ball slapping, our ball striking. It's more set up probably for the point construction, but maybe at Wimbledon we're better. Hey, listen, the other day I asked a group of tennis people, I said, what does United States, France, England, and Australia all have in common? Okay, well, those are the four Grand Slams. Those are the four Grand Slams. And those four Grand Slams are representative of the greatest contests in tennis, and they have been for over 100 years. It's really interesting, though. I mean, the United States, French Open, England, and Australian Open, Wimbledon and Australian Open. These have been the corner posts of our game, and these are the tests of truly what makes the best players in the world. That's right. Those are the four Grand Slam. Somebody else said, well, those are the countries that have the most money for tennis, too. Okay. Pretty good. That's right. They do. They have the most notoriety, and they have those big tournaments, and they get the most money. But you know what else they have in common, folks? No champions at the Grand Slams in about the last 12 to 15 years. Now, they have Andy Murray from Great Britain, But come on now, is there a French champion? Have we had a champion? Has Wimbledon, Andy Murray, all right? And, it, I mean, he's, I believe he's Welsh, isn't he? And so a lot of the people in England don't like that, I know. But he's a great player, and he's done well. But other Australians got a couple guys coming up. I know Craig Tiley's over there doing a heck of a job with Tennis Australia, and he's got a lot of innovative ideas and a lot of things he's come up with for competition, and he is grooming a lot of players. Here in the United States, we continued to do real well in junior ranks. I mean, last year we had Noah Rubin doing so well at Wimbledon and winning junior Wimbledon. This year at French, we had the two finalists. But what happens to our players after junior tennis? Well, we're going to talk about that today. There has to be a place, a reason why players are falling out and dropping out. Why do we lose so many players once they get to college? So much talent goes to college. What is going on? If you want to talk about this, call in area code 714-583-6853. How could we drop the ball with all of the money, all of the facility? Don't we have some of the best competitive instincts in the world? Maybe we're just dumbing all this down. Maybe we're doing some of the wrong things. We'll be right back with American Tennis.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net.
This is Coach Chuck Creasy. I want to remind you about our 2015 Total Tennis Training Camps. This is going to be my 40th summer of doing camps. We've had over 15,000 youngsters through our camps at the Total Tennis Training Camps. Now, folks, you can go to chuckcreasy.net and get a lot of information, but you can also sign up for these camps. We've got a camp in Lexington, South Carolina, in Sumter, South Carolina, and in Charleston, South Carolina. Also, for the first summer ever, I get to go back to my college stomping grounds and run a camp in Cookeville, Tennessee. So, folks, sign up at chuckcreasy.net, and I hope to see you or your youngster there this summer. We're trying to make them in America, and I just brought up the point that, you know, America, United States, France, England, and Australia, all with the most money, with the Grand Slams, we are the countries that are really hurting for our champions, and we're not getting many champions. We can right this ship, and let's talk about it a little bit. Call in area code 714-583-6853 if you want to be on the show today. But I'm going to approach it from the standpoint at the very start, and that's junior tennis. I believe that with all the good intentions, the emphasis has been so much on participation tennis and junior tennis that we forgot that our kids are naturally competitive. They want to be competitive. Now, there are some that are not. I brought up the point, probably 25% of the kids are naturally competitive. Maybe 25% are not competitive at all. Maybe 50% of the kids, those ones in the middle like you and myself, we had to learn about competition, and we had to be bled into it somewhat. But the bottom line is kids want to compete, and we're going after participation with our junior programs. And I think the biggest void right now in a sleeping giant is in two places, folks, and that is, number one, in high school tennis. We have 350,000 youngsters playing high school tennis, and I almost said competitive high school tennis, but the point is, they play these dumbed-down versions. They play no-ad scoring. They play abbreviated formats. Then the team tennis format is a good participatory event, but I've brought up many times on this show and with other people that you do not groom great players with team tennis. Team tennis is a participation event, and that probably is a lot of the reason we have problems with our college tennis as well. The kids get there, and we're not letting the cream rise to the top. We keep pulling back our best players and throwing them into a team environment. Rah, 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 that's nice. Kumbaya, everybody's happy. But it just is not what we need to do to breed and to groom champions. But with our junior tennis, 350,000 kids play. Only 18,000 are playing tournaments, five tournaments or more a year. That's unbelievable. So something is off here. We have made a after-school activity, a participation activity, more than a competitive sport. So high school tennis is definitely a sleeping giant. We've got to do something about high school tennis. I'm really anxious to hook up with some of the high school leaders and some of the people in different states and see if we can get a competitive arena. I think Texas does best. Good job out there to Texas folks, because they do team a little bit in the fall, and then they do individual competition in the spring, which is best of both worlds. And that's sort of the format we need for college too, by the way. Coach Randy Blumenthal has brought that up a bunch of times. We have it all goofed up in college. We'll get to that in a minute. But 350,000 youngsters play, only 18,000 play tournaments. What? It's unbelievable. So the other sleeping giant is rural tennis. And Coach Dan Vonk, myself, we've gone to the PTR and to different places where we've been trying to start a program called Small Town Tennis USA. And here's the idea, folks. These small towns in America is where kids get fired up about little things sometimes. Big things, but little things. And tennis is something that they really could gravitate to. And, you know, it's a point, too, that 73% of our professional athletes come from towns under 50,000 people. Sports are important where kids want to stand out in rural areas. In urban areas, I always say kids don't want to stand out. They want to fit in. I think it's a little bit different, maybe. That's just a theory. That's one of my theories and one of my talking points I use quite often. But those two places are the biggest places we are losing players. Now, I've got a quick guideline for the parent of the student-athlete, and I start with the parent of the student-athlete first, because parenting is really the first circle of influence over our young people. And the tragedy is that it's some of the inner city situations in our country already. I saw a statistic the other day. In some places, it's up to 70 or more percent of the youngsters only have one parent or no parent, and a lot of times a grandparent are bringing up the youngsters, and it's really a tragedy. But parenting with tennis players, as much support as we have with good and well-meaning parents, we have a lot of problems. So I'm going to start out with the 10 quick guidelines or the 10 golden rules for the tennis parent. I put here, starting out, an introductory paragraph to this, and I'd be glad to send this to any of you. If you want a copy, I can send this to you. Attitude and competitive effort must be addressed as a priority over winning and losing. I always say at the end of the show, you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. The process goals must be defined above the product goals. In other words, what is being learned, how you're going about it, why you're doing it, these things, then the goal, the success will come if you're doing the right things. I always tell youngsters, parents, and coaches that they need to know the difference between good goods, good bads, bad goods, and bad bads. A good good is doing the right thing and being successful. A bad bad is doing the wrong thing and you fall on your face, rightfully so. But here's where we goof up. A lot of times we'll take a bad good over a good bad, and that is wrong. A bad good is something would be something like taking shortcuts and winning. It would be like, like winning the lottery. How could that be a bad good? Well, yeah, you didn't have to work for it too hard, and therefore a lot of times people will throw away what they haven't worked hard for. Understanding the difference between value and price are two different things. We preach and talk to the kids about having good goods and good bads. Do the right thing and be successful. Do the right thing and be unsuccessful, but just do the right thing. I talked often also, a good way of putting this, is doing things right versus doing right things. Learn how folks to do the right things right. That's a good good. But if when you do the right thing and you do it wrong, you're just in the learning process there. So that's really a good bad. You don't want to do, we're into doing things right, but we do bad things right and bad things wrong. A bad thing wrong is a bad bad. I think you get my drift here. So that's the heading paragraph of this whole entire handout. So the 10 golden rules for the tennis parent. Number one, take a mandatory 30-minute cooling period before you talk to your youngster or start critiquing a match your child has just played. So what do you do when your child's coming off the court? Well, what you do basically is, how was your effort? Good effort. Okay, we'll talk in a little bit. Go take care of what you need. And you don't get out. It's so easy to analyze from the outside. With youngsters, you've just got to keep it really, really simple. Based on number one, effort. Number two, on thinking on the court. Number three, how their body actually worked. So isn't that interesting? So when you train players, you work on the body first, the mind second, the heart third. When you critique players, you critique the heart first, the mind second, and the body third. You know, your body's going to let you down, but try to get the youngster to where their heart doesn't let them down, number one. Their mind is used on the court with their strategies. And then, of course, the body works. Well, that's a big plus because a lot of times it doesn't. Number two, support small accomplishments as well as big ones. Small things and big things are all important things to the young athlete. I have a couple quotes after any of these. After number one, first of all, about not taking a mandatory 30-minute, I put the battle weary mind remembers very little. It's exactly true, but you got to remember that with our youngsters. And then secondly, the small accomplishments. There's no such thing as a bad win in tennis. I had a group of youngsters I was working this with this last week. I said, before a tournament, make sure you win 6 to 10 sets. Play people that you're supposed to beat. This is a huge mistake that youngsters and parents do, is that they overschedule and they play players that are better, way better than them, and hoping that they'll get luck up or get some kind of confidence, but actually it works very, very poorly to get beat up on and then go into a tournament. I literally used to have our number six player beat the manager and things before we'd play a big match. They'd get used to, you get used to converting the games and winning. So support small accomplishments as well as the big ones. Number three, never reward big wins with gifts or big meals. This teaches the athlete that winning deserves special treatment. The athlete must learn to do small things with class and pride while learning how to accomplish great things with comfort and grace. The quote is, "It is wise to walk with the great and the small in equal dignity." You know, kids don't know the difference between what is big and what is not until we make it a big deal. It's really, really interesting. My son, who's 9, playing baseball in the playoffs a couple weeks ago, pitched in a big game, did really, really well. They lost it at the end. And as a 9-year-old, you know, you sort of hurt for them. But he's just sort of okay right now. He's not at that age yet where it sinks in, well, whoa, this really, really hurt. And it's not wrong for it to hurt, but kids sort of react to the adults is what I'm trying to say. Our youngsters look at us and they see how we're handling something, and then they sort of mirror what we do. But I think it's really important to the kids to walk with the great into small and equal dignity. Treat those practices like they're a big match, and then I tell our youngsters treat the big match like they are practices. Number four, children should be allowed to have ownership of their own emotions and how to learn to deal with them in their own way. This sort of reflects on the last point, doesn't it? How a parent feels about winning and losing may or may not have relationship to the child's feeling about the outcome. The child should never feel that he has to please the parent with a result. Huh. No ups, no downs, just good effort and do the right thing on the court. The quote is, "The growth must continue long after the cheering and the crying have stopped." Tennis is a tough, tough sport, and we always say never let wins go to your head, never let losses go to your heart. In a perfect situation, a youngster would have winning go to their heart for confidence, losing go to their head for comfort. But the big thing is that they need to figure out what their parameters are. And then, of course, we guide them along. Of course, we tell them certain things. Number five, it will accelerate growth for the young athlete to learn how to love winning while understanding that it is okay to dislike losing and even hurt from losing as well. And this is for after probably it's past my son's age. He hadn't quite got it, but he's starting to. You know, losing isn't supposed to feel good, and it's a good idea to let the youngsters learn how to turn bad pain into good pain after a loss. But pain is not the enemy, folks. Parents out there, pain is not the enemy. It's important for the child to hurt after they lose so that they learn how to just deal with it in the proper way. The child should never feel that he has to please a parent, as I read a minute ago. They don't know how to react, so we've got to be pretty smart, no ups, no downs in our head. But they need to learn how to dislike losing and enjoy winning. Both of these responses will take the player in the right direction. Pain of losing, the reward of winning are both great motivators. However, the discipline must be just that we never let winning go to our head and losing go to our heart. Again, ideally, winning should go to our heart for confidence, losing to our head for learning. Number six, post-match. After the match, the El Fido rule reigns and is the one to hang on to. El Fido, L-F-I-D-O, learn, forget it, drive on. How's that? El Fido, learn, forget it, drive on. The best players have quality pain after they lose, which is more important than the quantity of the pain. Quality pain to learn is very, very important. If it's too much, you can turn bad pain into good pain by the youngster going out and taking a run afterwards, going out and working on the backboard. Then they walk away and say, hey, I got it. I figured it out. I figured this out. This is why I was missing so many backhands. I got it. I got it. Probably the worst thing to do, and I've said this on many of my shows, is after a bad, bad loss is to sit on it, put the rackets away, and let it fester like poison. It really, really hurts a youngster. After a tough, tough loss, they should have the habit of going out and turning bad pain into good pain. Yeah, it's going to hurt, but it's not the quantity of the pain, it's the quality of the pain that matters so much. You know, after players, here's part of the number six as well, players often have to learn that they're going to lose before tennis allows you to win. And it's amazing sport, isn't it? It is amazing sport. And that it teaches you so much about how to be humble and respect the game. And I have here, if you learn to honor the game will honor you. It's that simple. Tennis is not set up for someone's own comfort. It is not set up to be easy. It is set up to challenge you, to tax you, to make you work as hard as you ever have. And it's got to be the most rewarding feeling in the world when things go well after a hard, hard-fought tennis match. So parents, learn, forget it, drive on. In parenting, number seven, in parenting the strong-willed child, it is important to mold the will but never break the spirit. Quote from James Dobson's The Strong-Willed Child book from probably 20-some years ago. But in parenting, strong-willed child, mold the will, never break the spirit. It's an interesting situation with my own children sometimes. They get high-spirited and they do the wrong things, and you have to tell them, no, you don't do that. But however, I like your fire, I like your gumption, I like that. You know what I think we're doing in our junior tennis, folks? I believe absolutely that we are dumbing our kids down. We're turning our kids into a bunch of nice little robotical kids that are nice kids. And, you know, just really, I really am looking for fiery competitors out there. The kids that hate to lose and the kids that get a few point penalties. Sorry, referees. Boy, it's getting generic and milquetoast. I'd like to see some personalities. Hey, we need a McEnroe, don't we? We need something to get fired up about here again. I mean, it's just so generic. What are we doing? We're making a lot of just real nice, compliant kids. We need passionate warriors, and we need passionate, tough kids, not just nice little kids that never do anything wrong. It is important to mold the strong will, the will of the child, never break the spirit. Here's the quote. Folks, it's easier to tame a roaring tiger than inspire a timid pussycat every day of the week. Now, I haven't read Coach Mike Krzyzewski's new book, but someone told me it starts out by saying, and this makes so much sense, that a lion can lead a herd of deer to victory, but a deer, timid deer, will only cause chaos within a pack of lions. Huh, or something like that. So if anybody knows the quote, call in on this one. That's a pretty good one. Number eight in our 10 golden rules for the tennis parent. Number eight, basic sportsmanship. Never bring shame on the game nor the family name. I don't have a quote. That's the quote. Never bring shame on the game nor the family name. You know, when people talk about sportsmanship, that's all it is. Is that enough? Yeah, that's it. That sort of covers it. No shame on the game nor the family name. And that's all sportsmanship is. And your youngsters have to sort of know what that is. Number nine in parenting and coaching. Praise in public, only criticize in private. This is coaching 101. When people mess up, it's best. If you ever have to say something bad about somebody, just say, hey, Joe, you did this one wrong. That's not up to your standard. I've seen you do a lot better than that. Come on, man, pick it up. But you can take a person in the office and really let them have it, but the point of the thing is that if you criticize in public, you're going to tear the kid in half. You can praise in public and criticize in private, but you have to use both of those. Coaches, don't just be Dr. Feelgood and only praise. That doesn't go much. That doesn't go very far at all. Number 10, tennis results have a very short memory. However, relationships and friendships last for life. Tennis results have a very short memory. However, relationships and friendships last for life. Isn't it interesting what we remember about certain matches we played 35 or 40 years ago? Because the emotions are so tough and so locked in. Folks, this is a quick guide for the parent of child athlete. I've got the 10 golden rules for tennis parent. I'll be glad to send you one if you want to. We've got to go to commercial. We'll be right back in a minute with American Tennis. It's Chuck Creasy.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
And it's Coach Chuck Creasy, and I'm back with American Tennis. And we're talking about some of the different arenas where I think we can do a little bit better job at teaching. And, you know, listen, there's lots of teaching material out there. Just go to the Internet, go to YouTube. You can find so many things about teaching, but really you got to teach the heart first. You know, teach the heart first, the mind second. The body comes along pretty quick after that. I gave you the 10 golden rules for parents to follow. Let's talk about junior tennis. Folks, it's really, really simple what we've got to do. You know, junior tennis, we've done well. It's mainly because of entrepreneurial ideas, and it's because of the good, just very, very good and talented and very dedicated coaches. But we need freedom. Freedom. We don't need regulations, restrictions, over-mandating. These middle management guys, you guys gotta get out of it or something. We need competition. Our kids, it's just simple. We had champions, a lot of champions. Before all the hoopla, all we did was let our kids compete. Kids want to play. They want to compete. It's not a everybody's a winner game. When kids lose, they should hurt. When kids win, they should feel good. But we've just got to really change this. All right, we need to. So junior tennis, college tennis, folks, we've worn this one out. We have just worn it out, talking about everything from too many international players. And look, I'm not against international players. If they stay here and contribute about it, sure in the heck, I'm against all of the jobs, all the scholarships, everything going overseas. You know, and we just, when in the world did we think that we would ever survive as a tennis nation by using our college arena is the training ground. It's the stepping stone from junior tennis to the professional ranks. Now, what in the heck are we doing? Well, I know why we're doing it. We're doing it because coaches don't really want to do the work of training American kids. Oh, they're not as good as the foreign players. Well, maybe not. All the foreign players, or most of them, are pros. They're already pros. They play 3 years of pro tennis, then they come over here and use a scholarship. Now, how is that right? And it's not. Look, I've coached some fantastic foreign players, some international players who I love. The guys were very, very dedicated. I know most of you out there who have coached international players say, yeah, they love tennis. Our American kids are spoiled. That's not completely true, and you know it's not. It's easier to recruit a foreign youngster. I get 10 emails a week saying, look, can I come? All I need is a scholarship. And it's harder to go out and chase down the players in the United States that are from 60 on down. Top 60 players have no problem getting a scholarship to college, but from 60 to 600, you bet you have a hard time getting a scholarship. And the crying shame is that when there are no scholarships out there, do people really want to play tennis? Look, I'm evaluating this with my youngsters right now. I have an 11, 9, and 7-year-old. I'm teaching them all how to play. My 11-year-old daughter is really into swimming. She loves it, but the swimming scholarships, a lot of those have gone. Tennis, there is some places at some small schools for tennis scholarships for females, and but pretty much at the D1 level, 65% or more are going to international players. For the boys, I mean, I want my son to learn how to play tennis. It's an awesome sport. But it's got some weird things about it, doesn't it? Do you agree? Let me know. Tell me what you think there. But do you agree how expensive it is? And then if you want to go to a tournament, you might drop $1,000 in a weekend if you have your family with you for a tournament. I mean, it's really, really expensive. The swimming is awesome. The baseball is awesome. I mean, I'm giving my kids piano lessons, too. I want them to learn how to play the piano. And that's not as expensive as the tennis can be. Now, I'm lucky that we don't have to pay for instruction because I can teach my children. And by the way, parents, you out there, teach your own children. Get on the internet and learn. Be a student of the game. If you don't have the money to send them to somebody. If you do, God bless you if you have the money to send them to somebody. But these tournaments have got a USTA. My God, why are you robbing the bank? Now, I'll tell everybody what's going on, though. At the tournaments, you have to pay the officials so doggone much. I went to a tournament this weekend, a junior tournament, and the guy worked for 3 days. He walked out of there with a check for $450. Now, what? You have four or five officials, you go broke. We've got to change this. This is too expensive to have all these officials at all over the matches. Our kids just need to play by the code like they used to. All the junior tournaments I went to growing up, you never had officials. You would have a tournament director, and everybody played by the code. If you had a problem, you worked. And boy, aren't we cheating our youngsters by not teaching them to just work out our own problems. So let's get back to college here again. There are too many international players. Absolutely. They're taken. There's nothing. But there needs to be a two-per-team limit, and that's the way it needs to be. We've outsourced all of our tennis scholarships, and it's really showing in the pros a lot. American players who come out of juniors going to college, a lot of them are never to be seen again. Their games die. They go and learn that they can party on a Friday or a Saturday night and still win matches on a Sunday afternoon, and that's not a good precedent. They basically go to college and say, hey, I'm going to go to college because I play tennis, and that's about it. We've got so much going on with the regulations and the legislation and the dictation and the mandating that the ITA has done. It's just awful that they have put their hands in so far into college tennis that they now have changed the scoring system and are changing the scoring system to this dumbed down of no ad scoring. There's no way in the world our guys will win tough 5-set matches, except hats off to Steven Johnson, who won a 5-set clay court match at the French Open. It's the first time, folks, I have seen this happen in many, many, many years. This no-ad scoring is a disgusting impediment. It's an impediment to youngsters improving. Tournament directors like to get the tournament over with, so they'll do the dumb down. These 10-point tiebreakers, two things, 10-point tiebreakers and no-ad scoring is killing our juniors, just killing them. And we need to really get rid of this stuff. I got to 10 quick reasons why. Just, have you ever thought about this? No ads, not a rule of tennis. It's not a rule of tennis. It doesn't inspire people for the long run. No ad devalues the elements of conditioning. Well, we all know that. I mean, when you know, the conditioning part of tennis, isn't this a running sport? Isn't it something that you're supposed to get acclimated to the heat? And what's hot for adults is not the same for kids, is it? But isn't it used to see the toughest people out there surviving in tennis matches? And I always said, players don't die on the tennis court. What happens when a youngster gets tired is they miss balls and they lose. They don't die on the tennis court. Now and then you'll see great, great battles where two warriors or warrioresses go at it. And one person, the heat can overcome them. And I've seen some bad things, you have too. But it's a sport of acclimatization. Most of the time, players miss balls and they lose. The no ad promotes skewed results. The better player doesn't usually win because it's shorter and it's a dumb down. No ad accelerates parity between pecking orders. And otherwise, what happens, some of these, and I'm calling you out, you northern schools up there, a lot of Ivy League coaches, and some of those schools that play indoors only up there, I'm calling you out now, But basically, you've got immediate parity, and you guys like this no-ad scoring because you can slap balls, you don't have to construct points, and it just makes, just dumbs down the whole deal. Deciding point, do you know that it's worth two games? Two games. Referees have even told me they hate to make line calls on that 3-3 point. They hate it because it's worth two games. We all recognize that 4-2, it's either 5-2 or 4-3. But if you thought about it, if you're tied 1-1 and you lose that game to 1 point to a net cord or to a person taking a point, it's going to take you two games to overcome that bad call. This no ad isn't terrible, terrible impediment. It's terrible thing to the game. Just awful. It eliminates war zones. Importance of converting points. Conversion points are three in a row starts to flow. You ever realize that in real tennis you have to win three in a row? No ad, you only have to win one in a row. No ad promotes random momentum swings and it negates the small differences that players may take years to build with a slice backhand, a kick serve, drop shots. The small differences are neutralized because the scoring is the biggest part of no ad. It's more important in no ad how you manipulate or manage the score than it is your skill set. It's just blows my mind how coaches could think otherwise. At its highest claim, no ad promotes excitement instead of the more enduring element of drama. One of the big college proponents of no ad, I had to talk to him, and I said, one statement, remember, excitement dwindles with each occurrence. Drama intensifies with each denial. We need drama. The sport is about drama. It's not about excitement. I mean, come on. The excitement of ping pong, the excitement of excitement is seeing two players hit each other in football or something, maybe. And but the excitement of no ad is come on, saying that makes tennis more exciting. The 1 point, it pins and needles. It dwindles every time you have a 3-all point. The biggest deal is when a player learns how to grind out those tough deuce-ad games. And then they break the back of their opponent. My coaching friend said the other day, he said, I know my girl here is 12, is going to be very, very good. She had a tough, tough match. It was 1-1, and they had a 10 to 12-minute game. She must have had deuce-ad 3 to 4 times. She won that game and then rolled the match out 6-1, 6-1. And that's usually what happens. The overwhelming majority of our players and coaches are opposed to it, but our ruling bodies don't care. They're dictatorial, they're bullies, and they're not looking out for the betterment of the game. They said that they were saving the game of tennis, and that is such a ruse and such a bunch of hogwash. That's the best I can call it. In the end, none of us are bigger than the game. You honor the game, it will honor you. If you don't honor the game, it will not honor you. It's that simple. College, my golly, the politics of college tennis are killing it. The lack of training is killing it. The rules where we're only allowed 20 hours a week to practice and to meet with players. People say, oh, that's enough. No, it's not. If you want to play tennis, you've got to play twice a day. You've got to play twice a day. I absolutely have always believed 20 to 27, 28 hours a week is great to think about tennis, to watch matches, and to be, if when you are really, really in love with tennis. Now, parents, this is not for your 12, 14-year-old young, so we're talking about college-level players who want to be professionals. But you have to do this game. It's a game of repetition. You've got to do it over and over and over again. Three most important skills in tennis are repetition, repetition, and repetition. And so, man, folks, we're making a lot of mistakes on the college front here. And the professional front, it's real simple. More Americans out there playing. People come to the tournaments. In 1985, I think we had 75 professional events. We're hanging on to threads with 13 tour events in the United States right now. We're hanging on. We need more events for American players. Oh, don't you all wish we had an American-only circuit? Wouldn't that be cool? What would be wrong with that? I think absolutely that would help us greatly if we had a American-only circuit. So we have talked many of the weeks now about just the lack of toughness in our kids and lack of toughness in our society. And why is this? Now, let's start with why. Why is this? And frankly, I think everybody's too afraid of lawsuits and just the stupidity of too much legislation, regulation, rules and things. I mean, really, everybody is so uptight that we don't stretch anybody anymore. And is there a way out there? Does anybody know? Can we get just, you know, tennis, can we just do disclaimers or something? They've got these ridiculous rules in place now that say kids can only play like 3 hours a day or something in tournament competition. I don't know. Or used to play. I was bragging one time when I played 14 sets in one day at a tournament. I played two events, singles and doubles, played 14 sets one day. And you don't think I was proud of that as a youngster? And all of us did that. Most of you have played for a long time. You can look back and you remember being able to do this. But basically, we're doing so many things with the champion of the week. We baby the kids and they get weaker. They don't get tougher by a babying them. We dumb down the scoring system and they get weaker. We try to come up with gimmicks to get them trophies. And we champion the week, we weaken the champions. We do all these things in the hopes that, but in the end, comfort bears no fruit. Comfort bears no fruit at all. And the problem that we have is only going to get worse. I do not know what it's going to take to get us out of this. Maybe the era of competitive sports is dropping off. Maybe it is dying. Everybody wants to be tough. Nobody wants tough times. Everybody wants to win. Nobody wants to pay the price. There's a saying that the more you sweat in peacetime, the less you'll bleed in war. Well, in high-level competition, we're not looking so good in the college ranks for sure. In the professional ranks, we've got a few people out there. Hats off to Steven Johnson, who really looks like a great warrior out there. We wish him good luck. Now, you know, folks, that in his last 2 years in college, he didn't lose a match. And he played traditional regular scoring. So really, he is one of our greatest hopes out there. Now, Jack Sock, looks like he has made a pretty darn good run of it, and it's really, really coming along. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see if he can pull out some five-set matches and things like that. I think Dennis Kudla is back there. I always liked Dennis. You know, good warrior, good fighter. We'll see, though. We'll see. On the women's side, we've got 7 or 8 players that look like they're pretty close to taking off. Of course, Serena keeps winning, but really she's, I don't know, I'm not talking about Serena here. I'm talking about the younger players coming up. I just know that it's been nearly 20 years since we've seen many players come out of college and women's tennis and go on and play at a high, high level. So, you know, what do? We take care of the person in front of us. We try to inspire that child in front of us. If our circle of influence is that person right in front of us, our circle of concern is really big. It's the whole United States of America. We would like for the whole United States to take off and do a better job. But that person right in front of you, if they can ever get eager to learn to compete, all of the children that I work with in my camps in the summer, I always say the most valuable thing is, as Clarence Mabry said, the hunger of an inquisitive mind. And I will tell youngsters that you can go to school every day of your life and never be a student. You can play piano every day of your life, 7 hours a day, and never be a musician. You can play tennis 8 hours a day. You can be on the tennis court every day of your life and never be a tennis player. The difference is when that youngster has their own inquisitive mind kick in and they fall in love with the sport and they do it in the way they want to do it and why they develop their own heart for why they do it. It's a tough one. I read you today the handout on the 10 parenting quick tips. I hope that will help you. You can go back to there, you know, for some years to come. The whole thing with American tennis is that we all are in it together. We have to, whether it's junior tennis, college tennis, professional tennis, and just helping inspire that person that's right in front of us. More competition, folks. Get those kids in the tournament. We need to get into tournaments. It's a competitive sport, a competitive arena. You don't get better by just hitting balls around. You've got to play. I want to talk with you next week. We're going to bring on and talk about the bigger problem of motivating our youth in all of the different arenas. Made in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his Simpsons. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Made in America. Made in America. And this is Coach Chuck Creasy reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and has very little to do with a win or a loss. Thanks for joining us this week on American Tennis. Join us again next week and listen to Steve Clark, Coach Steve Clark's new radio show on the UR Tennis Network, as far as the other programs on UR Tennis Network. We'll see you next week, folks.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.